The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And I just want to check and make sure everyone can hear me. I have a little bit of a cold, so I can't project as much as I usually do. Okay, people in the back are saying you can hear, so that's good. Thank you. Tonight I'd like to talk about the present moment and why we talk about this. Why do we keep coming back to the present moment, our body, our breath, our experience of the present moment over and over again? What does it have to do with anything? So I'd like to talk about that a little bit tonight, explore it from some different angles. One of the reasons that we end up doing this, I think one of the main things that people discover as they sit down and practice this meditation a little bit, one of the reasons we do this is because it feels good. At times we come back to the present moment, we connect with our experience of breathing over and over again, and the mind starts to settle down. It starts to get a little bit calmer. So there can be a feeling of relaxation, of relief, of letting go of the initial experience. In that initial experience of the mind settling, there can be a quality of relaxation and peacefulness that starts to happen. So this feels good as the mind starts to let go. Part of the reason it feels good is because the mind starts to stop being quite so reactive. It settles into a place where it's not responding willy-nilly to every thought or sense impression that comes through. It's much more grounded into just something very stable. So the reactivity to our experience starts diminishing. So this feeling of well-being begins to develop as this reactivity begins to settle. What is reactivity? I'd like to just talk about that a little bit too. The mind reacts primarily when it notices something is either pleasant, unpleasant, or mostly pleasant or unpleasant. It will occasionally react when something is neutral, but primarily it reacts when things are either pleasant or unpleasant. When something is pleasant, we like it, we want it. And then this movement of wanting to have it, hold on to it, keep it, get it, figure out how to get more of it comes up. Or perhaps something is unpleasant and we don't like it. We don't want it. We want to get rid of it. We want to try to figure out how to get it out of our life, how to figure out how to never have it in our lives again. So this movement, pleasant, liking, wanting, unpleasant, not liking, not wanting, this is the basis for reactivity. It happens to us all the time. We have an experience of some sight comes into our, we see something and we like it, we want it, we launch into a thought pattern of how can I get that thing? Or something comes into our sight and we don't like it, we want to figure out, oh, well, I think I'll leave this area, you know, I don't like this thing. So we move away from it. So the mind is pretty much continually in this mode, very frequently in this mode of reacting to experience. And as we begin to come into the present moment and experience the pleasant, the unpleasant, just as something that's happening in the pleasant moment. And we see that we don't have to react to it. The mind can get calmer and more peaceful around that. And we actually see that a lot of the reason why we suffer is because of this reactivity that's going on in our minds. And the settling, the stilling of the mind, this calming into the space of the mind getting a little bit concentrated begins to give us a taste of what the mind without reactivity is like. And we like that. When the mind is not reactive, it feels good. There's a description of this, that sometimes when we come into this place where the mind isn't so reactive, it's called the happiness of seclusion. That the mind becomes very happy because it's secluded from all of that negativity and wanting, all of those movements of mind going, pulling us every which way. When the mind relaxes into the present moment, it gets really contented with just what is happening right now. So that's one reason why we practice this coming into the present moment. So part of the point of mindfulness is to begin to understand this reactive mind, to begin to it's a learning process that as we see how our mind functions, as we see it pick up something pleasant and then move into this wanting mode, or see it latch onto something unpleasant and try to figure out how to get rid of it, and we see that the wanting itself, the not wanting, the pushing away, is a source of unpleasantness. It's a source of suffering for us. So we start to learn how our own minds contribute to our suffering by paying attention in the present moment. And in that witnessing of how our own mind contributes to our suffering, we start to learn how we can let go of it, how we can let go of that reactivity. So we can let go in a couple of different ways. There's the letting go that can happen through the process of cultivating concentration. That, you know, if something comes up in our meditation, we simply let it go and come back to the breath. If a thought comes up about somebody we're angry with, we just let it go and come back to the breath. That does cultivate a diminishment of reactivity, and it is a form of letting go of that that reactivity. So over and over again, we can practice cultivating letting go in that way. It's kind of an active form of letting go. If some kind of difficulty or aversive state appears, we simply say, oh, not now, and we come back to the breath. So that's a kind of an active form of letting go, a conscious trying to let go of things that we see that are not so helpful. Unskillful mind states like anger, hostility, rage, avarice. We see if we can let go of them. So we can let go because we see that that reactivity is not so skillful. And as we get more and more familiar with our patterns of mind, as we get more familiar with the way our mind works, we are more able to recognize, oh, I see that particular thought pattern is heading in a direction that is leading me into an abyss. I just don't want to go there. And we can consciously kind of pull ourselves back because we see from the experience of having observed our minds, we see that a particular pattern leads us someplace that we just know we don't want to go. So we can kind of consciously pull back for that reason as well. Just beginning to see the drawbacks to particular patterns of thought. We over and over again, we've seen a particular pattern of thought lead us into immense suffering. And we notice that pattern of thought starting and it's like, okay, I'm going to just put my attention on something else right now. We know the drawbacks to that particular pattern. That's another way we can let go. And we can let go because we are more drawn to the stillness of mind, actually, too. So there's lots of different ways this letting go can be manifested. So You might have a sense of a peacefulness that develops as you stay with the breath. And you're drawn to that peacefulness. So we let go of the unskillful mind state because we have more wholesome things that we are wanting to cultivate. So we can let go because of the actual act of cultivating concentration. We can let go because we've seen the drawbacks of the pattern of mind. Or we can let go because we actually feel like we have better things to do in this moment. There's another way that the letting go happens. And I want to talk about this because it's a key point. It's a key way that the mindfulness works. Sometimes when something comes up for us, a pattern comes into our experience, a particular kind of very habitual form of our minds, maybe a way that we get into anger or sadness or loneliness. There's lots of different familiar ways that we land in suffering. And sometimes we don't have much choice about saying, I'm not going to go there. You know, we just get pulled into it. And it's not a problem if that happens, actually. Through mindfulness, we can just be with the experience. And in that being with, in that simple just meeting the experience of loneliness or anger or frustration or sadness, that itself is a way of letting go. And let me talk about this a little bit, describe what I mean by this. It's a form of letting be, essentially, that is a letting go. That as we bring mindfulness to something difficult, like anger or loneliness or sadness, the mindfulness meets that, and because we're mindful, it doesn't function in the same way that it does when it's just acting on its in its habitual pattern. So when we're angry and we're not mindful, there's just a kind of a, you know, there's a habit of anger, or there's a habit of sadness almost. And when we're not paying attention, that pattern is just digging deeper ruts into our brains, essentially. That when we are in a mode of anger and we're not mindful of it, it cements that anger pattern and makes it stronger. Now, there's a way that when we bring mindfulness to it, it doesn't happen instantly, but there's a way when we bring mindfulness to our experience of anger or sadness that it doesn't end up cementing the pattern. It actually ends up allowing it to release. So we're not digging the grooves deeper, we're actually allowing them to let go. There's almost this, it seems counterintuitive, you know, that paying attention to something like anger would allow it to release. But it's a special kind of paying attention. It's a paying attention with a non-judgmental paying attention, and it's also a paying attention to the actual experience of anger, not all the thoughts around it, or the experience of sadness, or the experience of loneliness. Whatever the actual experience is, we connect to that, not engaging with the thoughts, but seeing if we can connect to particularly the physical experience. Primarily, the patterns in our minds are deepened. Those ruts are deepened through the thoughts around a pattern. The he said, she did, I should have done, I wish I'd done. If I were in that situation again, I will do. You know, that all of those thoughts, they tend to deepen the ruts. If we just hang out with the actual experience of that difficult emotion, it tends to allow it to let go. So there's this kind of an interesting paradox about mindfulness, the bringing our attention into the present moment. that when we pay attention to something that is a beautiful state of mind, like peace or joy or happiness, when we bring our mindfulness to that experience, it tends to make it happen more frequently in our experience. When we pay attention to happiness, it creates the conditions for happiness to arise more frequently in our experience. When we pay attention with mindfulness, with this non-judgmental mindfulness, to these difficult states, I call them afflictive emotions sometimes, if we pay attention with mindfulness to afflictive emotions, it has the capacity to, it creates the conditions for it to appear less frequently in our experience. It sounds counterintuitive, but you can play with it in your own experience and see the truth of this. It's the way our minds are, actually it's something about the way our minds are put together. That when we see with mindfulness, essentially what happens when we see with mindfulness something skillful or wholesome, like peace or happiness or joy, when we see those states, we see the results are that we are in less suffering, that the mind is happier, that there's less suffering when we are mindful in those states. When we are mindful of the afflictive emotions, what we become aware of is the consequences of that. We become aware of the fact that we suffer. And our minds seem to be built, if we pay attention with mindfulness, to steer us away from suffering and towards happiness. It's kind of an automatic kind of thing. If we bring mindfulness to our experience, we will head towards happiness, towards peacefulness. Another reason why it's helpful to pay attention to the present moment is because that's the only place anything ever happens. Everything that we experience, the only place we experience it is right here and right now. We think that there's a past, and we think that there's a future. But what is the past, actually? The past is nothing more than a thought about something that happened, perhaps. But that thought of the past is happening right here in the present moment. So what we call the past is actually constructed right here and right now in the present moment. Likewise with the future. Something that we envision happening in the future, that is arising right now as a thought in the present moment. The only way we experience the past is through an idea. The only way we experience the future is through an idea. Now, the past at least has some kind of, we did go through things. I'm not saying that we didn't experience things. That's not what I'm saying. But what we experienced is no longer here in existence. But sometimes it feels like it is. A thought comes into our mind from the distant past, and suddenly it's like you're reborn into that world. That is happening right in the present moment. So everything that happens to us is happening right here and right now. In one of the suttas that one of my favorite suttas, and actually he says this kind of frequently, he comes to the Four Noble Truths and he says, someone who reflects wisely reflects, this is suffering. This is the cause of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering, and this is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. And when I first read this, I didn't quite understand what he was really getting at. But as I explored this more and more, what I realized that he's saying is that he's pointing us here into the present moment. So not only do past and future appear in the present moment, that's all there is. It's the present moment. But our suffering is actually created in the present moment. If we're suffering over something that happened in the past, it's because there's a thought arising in the present moment about the past, and we're recreating that suffering right here and right now. So, for instance, you might, you know, thoughts come into our minds all the time. You know, we're bombarded by our thoughts. There's a strong associative nature to our thoughts. You know, we walk down the street. Maybe we walk past a schoolyard, and suddenly there's an image in our mind of being in a schoolyard when we were 10. You know, that memory appears to us so strongly. So, you know, memories appear just because we're walking down the street. And then maybe that memory appeared, that memory of being in the schoolyard when you were 10 years old. And there is an incident that happened of being taunted or teased, as, you know, 10-year-olds are prone to do. And the feeling of anger, of helplessness, of frustration comes right then in that moment. I mean, it's gone. It's ages old. And yet, in that moment, it comes back. Now, it's not that that feeling has been lurking underneath somewhere. I mean, I would say the tendency to that feeling has been lurking. But that actual feeling hasn't been lurking. And it's being recreated right here, right now, in this moment. What has happened is that you've been walking down the street. There's been the experience of seeing the schoolyard. The memory has come up in association with that. And then there's a reaction to the memory. That's what's happening in the present moment. But what seems to happen, especially with some of these really charged memories, it's like they're so tightly coupled that we just can't even fathom that that memory would appear without all of those emotions coming along with it. But they're different things. They actually happen sequentially. We think somehow that that whole package comes together, that that memory and all those emotions are all right, you know, happening simultaneously. But there's actually a time lag they happen, you know, sequentially, one thing after another. So that memory arises of being in the schoolyard. And then in that experience of that memory, those emotions are created all over again, right there in the moment. So that suffering is being created right in the present moment. And not only the suffering, but the cause of the suffering is created in the present moment. Now, some of the conditions clearly have come from the past. The conditions of, you know, being in the schoolyard and having been taunted, that is something that happened. But right now, what's happening is that that thought has appeared in the mind, and the reactivity is happening all over again. So that thought has happened, and then we react in the moment all over again. So the trigger for that is the seeing of the memory, or the memory arising in the mind is kind of the trigger for that reaction. And that reaction is happening right then and there. So that seeing that scene of being taunted and then feeling those feelings, it's a step. It's a causal linking of these experiences. So if we can come into the present moment, we can start to actually see. We can start to actually see these patterns, and we can begin to see the birth of our reactivity. we can see that there doesn't necessarily have to be a coupling between the thought and the reactivity. It is possible. It is possible to have that kind of a thought arise in the mind and not react to it. I have this from my own experience. I know this from my own experience. Thoughts that used to reliably trigger feelings of shame, embarrassment, anger, hostility, loneliness, sadness. They were reliably triggering that. Those thoughts come into my mind, it's like, oh yeah, there's that thought. So they're not inexorably linked. They can be decoupled. And the way to that decoupling is through being aware in the present moment. Not only of the feelings that come up, because if the feelings come up, you know, if the feelings have been triggered, there's not much that we can't like ignore that or say, oh, well, that's been triggered. I shouldn't pay attention to that. Or it's somehow, you know, I just want to get rid of it. That's not the way to work with mindfulness. With mindfulness, we simply work with whatever has come up. So if you've noticed a triggering of a pattern of emotion, that's what we pay attention to. And in that paying attention, that pattern has a chance to diminish. But also we can begin to see through a more, moment-to-moment seeing of our experience, we start to see these thoughts. We start to see a thought appear and notice, oh, I don't quite feel the emotion just yet. Oh, and then we start to see that it cascades and it builds. So we start to see how it happens. And as the mind sees the pattern, as the mind recognizes that it is actually something that it itself is doing, it begins to let go of that pattern. So mindfulness is almost a magic thing. At least in my experience, it seems almost magic that, you know, we don't have to do anything really, except bring our mindfulness to what we're experiencing. And in an almost, you know, magical way, it leads us, it teaches us in moment to moment, it teaches us why we are suffering. And as it understands, as the mind understands why it's suffering, it changes its course. Now, it's like turning a battleship. It doesn't, like, you know, change its course immediately. Sometimes it can. Sometimes there can be some really fast, amazing changes that happen. Those are rare. It's much more likely that it's like turning a battleship. But over the course of time, you can see how the battleship is turning. You can see your mind turning. You can see it changing. Another way that we experience mindfulness, or actually, there's kind of our awareness is functioning all the time, whether or not we know that we're aware is another matter. So there's kind of, Gill has sometimes called it passive versus active awareness. And passive awareness is just the kind of awareness that's functioning all the time. You know, that if you're sitting in a room reading a book or something, and, you know, somebody comes in and wanders through and goes out, and a little while later you come out of reading the book. I mean, you may not be paying much attention to the fact that that person did that at the time, but there's a way in which that you know that that's happening. You know, it's not that you're aware of it while it's happening. It's more like, oh yeah, I remember. If somebody came up to you afterwards and said, do you remember that person coming through? Yeah, I remember that person coming through. That's kind of a passive awareness. And I had a clear, on one retreat, it was kind of a clear recognition of this, that I was sitting in the dining hall and I was kind of spacing out. You know, I was just kind of zoning out. You know, I wasn't being mindful. I was just tired of paying attention. I was just, you know, spacing out. And, you know, somebody came into the dining hall and got their plate and got stuff and walked out. And then, you know, another person came in and walked in, got their plate and walked out. And a few minutes later, I came into mindfulness and realized, oh, here I am sitting in the dining room. And I realized, or I saw, wow, you know, I know that I'm here right now. I see that. But I remember those things that happened a few minutes ago. I remember seeing those two people come in. What's the difference between that kind of, you know, spaced out awareness and this knowing what's happening right now and right here? And it's kind of that immediacy of the awareness. That is what Gill calls active awareness. That is really mindfulness. When you know what's happening while it's happening, that is being aware in the present moment. And one of the beautiful experiences that starts to happen as we get familiar with mindfulness is that the moment that we remember, we suddenly come into awareness again after being lost in thought. It's a very bright and clear experience. I've been talking about this a lot lately, so maybe some of you have heard me talk about this. This moment of waking up, this moment of remembering, the moment of knowing that you're mindful. There's a brightness, a clarity to that moment, to that awareness. And there's a distinct difference between that and spacing out. There's a knowing, there's a clarity, and it just being very sure of knowing that you are aware. And part of it too, in that moment of waking up, that's an effortless kind of mindfulness. And what is kind of interesting about that is in that moment, what is happening really is that you're waking up to what you're already aware of. Because that awareness is always happening. So in any moment, we can wake up into what is already happening, already going on. And it's kind of a beautiful exploration to just see, can we just be aware of what is already happening? What is the mind already aware of? As soon as the mind wakes up, as soon as you know you're aware, as soon as you remember about awareness, you can check into this. What's already happening here? There's no need to do anything, no need to pull your mind back or direct it in any particular way. You're already aware. Can you notice what you're already aware of? In that moment then of becoming aware, in that moment we have a choice. So we can choose what to pay attention to. Maybe we should just come back to the breath. But there's no need to chastise ourselves or beat ourselves up about the fact that our mind had been wandering. So in that moment, we are now mindful. We don't actually have to come back. We're already back. We're already in the present moment. Celebrate. Here I am again. Another reason to stay in the present moment, one of the keys to our happiness lies in an experience that happens in the present moment. The Buddha taught this, that there's one aspect of the present moment that is actually the key, that unlocks the movement towards happiness. And that is the place of choice. The present moment is the only place that we can choose to do anything. We can plan or think about choosing something in the future, or we can remember choices that we've made in the past. But if we're going to make a choice, the present moment is the only place that we can do it. And the Buddha taught that this point of choice is the key to our happiness or our suffering. If we're not aware in the present moment, if we're not mindful of what's happening in the present moment, choices will be made. And they'll be made by our habits. They'll be made by our conditioning. If we are mindful, we have an opportunity to unravel that conditioning and make more skillful choices. So this moment of choice is actually, it's got a couple of pieces to it. There's this quality of intention, which I'm going to use in a very specific way here. Intention being the movement of mind that precedes any act of body, speech, or mind. So there's this moment of being about to do something. This kind of, it's a neutral kind of impulse, a neutral kind of push to move, to speak, to think. But accompanying that intention is always some kind of motivation, some kind of reason why we're about to move, why we're about to speak, why we're about to act. Or think, even. And it's that motivation that is what the Buddha talked about as being the key, what will lead us into either happiness or suffering. If the motivation behind our actions is based in greed or aversion or delusion, we will suffer. It may not happen immediately, but at some point we will suffer. If the motivation behind our actions is one of compassion, of loving kindness, of joy, of equanimity, we will be led towards happiness. This is the Buddha's teaching on karma, and it's a really huge topic, so I'm really going to only explore it from a little bit tonight. So it's really that moment before we act or speak. We have the opportunity, if we're mindful, to notice that moment right before. Now this can be challenging. It's a pretty subtle aspect of our mind, this moment of getting ready to do something, of being about to do something. Every single moment of our experience has this intention to it. So we're essentially making choices all the time. So it's mind-boggling when you start to see this intention, just how much choice we actually have. You know, at any moment, as I'm moving my arm, I mean, often we might think that there's the initiation to begin to move it, and then, you know, that's the impulse, that's the initiation. But all the way through that movement, there's the impulse to continue. Every single moment of movement, there's a continued, like, keeping it going almost. As we begin to pay attention in the present moment, we can start to notice this intention, at least at key points. Some key points might be before you speak, for instance. Now, this is a challenging one. I mean, being aware of speech is one of the most difficult things to engage in our mindfulness practice. But it's well worth experimenting with and exploring. And one good exercise that can help you both with bringing mindfulness to speech and exploring this intention and motivation a little bit is to see if you can pause before you speak. And you might try this with a friend, you know, have a lunch sometime where you decide you're going to try doing this speaking mindfully and pausing before you speak. It can be a little bit odd doing this in a work situation or, you know, with people you don't know very well, because it can feel a little funny when you're talking and somebody's like, oh, okay. It just can kind of interrupt the standard flow of engagement. So if you sit down with somebody and choose to do this, it can be helpful. So you might try this. Go out to lunch with a friend when you decide to do this. And you can, one thing, if you can catch yourself before you're speaking and you pause before you speak, you have caught the intention to speak. If you can remember to pause before you speak, you have noticed that you're going to speak before you speak. So you can know that you're going to speak. In that moment of pausing, you will probably know what you're going to say. And you will also probably have some clue as to the reason. So this simple exercise of pausing begins to give us a window into this intention and the motivation. I did this, just this very exercise I was describing to you. I sat down with a friend at lunch one day and we were doing this, or we had agreed we were going to do this. And I saw a thought appear, and I saw that I was going to say, I pause, and it's like, that's not probably a good thing to say. So I was silent, and something else popped up, and I saw this little, you know, just a little twist again. It's like, I'm not going to say that. And, you know, after a few minutes of just sitting there in silence, I just said to him, I'm seeing things come up and ruling them out. That I could say as a skillful thing to say. So it can be kind of eye-opening when we start to do this. Just how much we actually say things out of they don't have to be really, you know, egregiously bad. You know, it's not like, you know, I just had a political analogy come in, and I'm trying to refrain from political analogies. So I'll just let you use your imagination on that one. So it doesn't have to be egregiously bad in terms of, you know, the motivations. It could just be a subtle self-aggrandizement, you know, just a subtle puffing up of, aren't I so great? Or just a little bit of wanting sympathy because somebody else did something to you. You know, and you can just see just the subtle twist of that mind that wants to put that out there. The motivation, wanting the sympathy or wanting to appear to be, you know, a great person. You might find that you can find a way to say the thing without necessarily engaging in that motivation. So we don't have to cut ourselves off, you know, from speaking. But can you perhaps just communicate the information in a way that's more wholesome? Doesn't quite have that twist to it. But in any case, the exercise is quite eye-opening, and you'll probably end up getting to see an amazing number of unskillful motivations as you start looking at why you say things. And this is not an exercise that I'm encouraging you to do in order to beat yourselves up about seeing these things. As I practice more and more, I begin to appreciate when I see these kind of motivations appear, because at least I'm seeing them. I'm seeing that movement, as opposed to it having the opportunity to just erupt without any kind of a check on it. So this moment of choice, we can also look at, explore other ways. We can explore it through our bodily actions as well. Something that's fun to try is to see if you can just key into major changes of posture and why you're doing that. Maybe during your workday, you know, if you sit at a desk a lot, occasionally you have to get up to do something, maybe go to the bathroom or go to the copier or get a drink of water or something like that. Just see if you can begin to notice that you're going to do this change of posture. This is pretty challenging, but that's another good place where you can really, it's a gross shift. It's a place where that intention can be seen with relative ease. So that's another good place to look for this intention. Another place to work with this or play with this is in your sitting practice. You might take a period of sitting where you vow to stay still. You vow to not move. You know, you could do this maybe for 10 minutes at the end of your sitting or something like that. Or maybe 10 minutes at the beginning of your sitting. And any time, if you're vowing to stay still, you might have an opportunity to notice before you move. So typically, you know, as we sit, there's often like little adjustments. You know, we shift our knee a little bit, or we scratch an itch, or do something like that. If you vow to keep still, you might get to notice that impulse, that strong impulse to move. And there it can be really clear, because we're in meditation. We're focused on this mindfulness moment to moment. So that urge to move can be very clear in meditation, especially if it's something like an itch. You know, itch can be a real strong power to make us move. So if you can just sit there and just notice that urge, notice that wanting, see if it passes, and just explore this intention and the motivation. So this point, this choice point, is crucial for our happiness. As we start to see more and more of the choices that we make, we start to incline more towards skillful choices. We start to incline more towards acting out of compassion, out of kindness. And it ends up almost that even the movement of anger or frustration can almost wake us up. It's like over time, as we get more and more familiar with the suffering around these unskillful states of mind, that they tend to wake us up. That we become aware, oh, I'm getting ready to do something, because this state of mind is there. So the power, that mindfulness has a huge power to illuminate our suffering and to point us in the direction of freedom. And I think that's probably enough for me for this evening. So we've got a few minutes if there are any questions or comments. Okay, let's just end with about 5 minutes of sitting then. And at the end of it, I'll do a... just a short reflection. May the beneficial results of our practice of connecting with the present moment, of being able to be with our suffering, understand our suffering, be with our happiness, our joy, understand our happiness, our joy. May the beneficial results of that be offered and shared with all beings, so that all beings may share in this movement towards freedom. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be safe. May all beings live with ease. May all beings be free from suffering. Thank you for your attention.